All right, welcome and thank you for tuning in to another episode of Theater Cleaners. Today we're going to be talking about a cool little dark old flick called Donnie Darko. It's pretty memorable. I mean, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. You're not going to forget it. There's a lot that stands out in this one, and I'm sure Dom over here can give us a good synopsis as to what the movie actually is about.
During the presidential election of 1988, a teenager named Donnie Darko sleepwalks out of his house one night and sees a giant demonic-looking rabbit named Frank. That's not a period. That's a comma.
That's a comma.
Those are commas.
Demonic-looking rabbit named Frank who tells him the world will end in 28 days. When Donnie returns home, he finds that a jet engine has crashed into his bedroom. Is Donnie living in a parallel universe? Is he suffering from mental illness? Or will the world really end?
You know, you didn't butcher that one too bad. So props to you. But anyways, we're joined here today by AJ Aiello. He is the co-founder of 12 Midnight, the yang to Dustin's yin. He's also our head of production and the one who picked this movie for us to watch. So first and foremost, welcome, AJ. Thanks for joining.
Thank you for having me. And I really appreciate that you said yin and not ying, like so many people do, because that's the correct way.
Yeah. There used to be, in our era, there was like a TV show on Disney called Yin Yang, and it was actually about rabbits. So it kind of felt like a good tie.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I like the way you're starting out strong.
Yeah, we're thinking today.
Starting out strong.
But anyways, I mean, with our guests, we always let them pick what movie they want to watch. So first things first, why'd you want us to watch this movie, and what's it mean to you?
Well, I think the reason I picked this movie was because you gave me like three choices, and, this was one of them, and it's a weird movie. It's definitely one of my favorite movies ever. I don't know that I think it like does everything perfectly, but it hits a lot of notes that I love personally. I love kind of like the slow, moody, like slow burn type film. I love 80s new wave music, and I love sci-fi time travel shit. And the time period, so this movie now is like 22 years old or something.
Yeah, it was made in 2001.
And I was like squarely like in my early college years and, you know, grappling with my own stuff as a, like a young adult. And so it like hit a lot of notes for me at the time too that I could relate to. So it just always stuck with me. So when I had the chance to, you know, talk to y'all about it, I was down because I've seen this movie a lot.
Hell yeah. So... with that being said, I mean, obviously you've seen it a time or two, but what would you say your like initial impressions or expectations were going into the film? Like, did you think it was going to hold up on your whatever number watch this was?
I don't know. The number's definitely up there. I figured, so it's been a minute since I've seen it. I figured that it would look and feel different than I remembered, because it is like starting to age now. It's, you know, like 20 years old, like we said, but I kind of went in not like nervous, because I know I love the film, and I know like regardless, it's unbelievably quotable and it's complicated, and there's lots of little like breadcrumbs and like Easter eggs and like fun stuff along the way that it's like trying to put together a puzzle that really can't be put all the way together, which I love that in any movie. So, you know, going into it, I figured it would probably not hit the same as it did 20 years ago, or even 2, 3, 5 years ago, but it held up for me fine.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. My initial thoughts of watching this movie is like, the first question I kind of asked myself when I was done watching it, I was like, what? Just like, just like, what?
I think that's the appropriate response to the first
like, what the fuck did I just watch? Like, it's not like it was weird to where I was uncomfortable watching. It was just like weird, right? Like, what is this movie like about?
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to really like pick the point. Like, it's like, what is this movie about time travel? Cause like they say it, they specifically say time travel, but you're kind of watching it. It's like, is he just crazy or is it about time travel? Cause they talk about time travel and he's obsessed with it. But you never see it until it's kind of like the very end of the movie. And then you're like, wait, is he just going crazy? Is this just everything he imagined? Or is it actually time travel? And I don't know. It's one of those movies just like, what the fuck did I just watch? But like in a good way?
Yeah, because it keeps you like it keeps you hooked the whole time because you're intrigued. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's like part of the movie is the fascination, and like the part you don't know is really what keeps you going versus like, oh, you're learning everything along the way. And sometimes in certain movies that'll keep you around because you just want to find out more. But it's like it's what you don't know and what you're not going to find out that really keeps you hooked, because it's like, you know, at the end, there's going to be some form of reveal, but you just don't
sort
know.
Of.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
But I love that you said that, by the way, because that literally when I found out that you guys had never seen this, I was hoping that your reaction to it would be the same as my first viewing reaction, which was literally, what the fuck did I just watch?
Yeah.
So I think that is how you're supposed to feel. Or we just aren't smart enough to unpack it all the way by the end of the first viewing.
I mean, maybe that tracks for Dom and I to not be smart enough to unpack it, but
it's fair. It's fair.
I mean, my first, my expectations going in, I didn't really have any because I was like, I don't really know what this could compare to. Like, I didn't know a movie that it'd be on the same level with that would give me that idea.
I still am not sure if I have a good.
I would say it's close to Inception in the way I felt about the story after watching it the first time.
Confused.
Just like, what the fuck did I just watch? But in a good way. The thing that Inception does differently than Donnie Darko is it tries to explain it. It mm-hmm. tries to explain it so you can understand it. And Donnie Darko doesn't.
Does not.
And I think it actually ends up being better because it doesn't try to explain it.
So this is actually, I told Todd at least earlier this week, make sure you don't watch the director's cut. And Richard Kelly, I love you. I'm sorry for saying this, but he released another version of this later where he over explains stuff. And it's kind of like, Dom, brace yourself. It's kind of like the Star Wars episodes 1-3. Mm. They start getting into too deep into midichlorians and stuff. And you're like, you've ruined the allure and magic of it a little bit.
You ruined the question. Is he actually just crazy or is this real?
Yeah.
Which is really what I think makes it great is it's a little Shutter Islandy almost. Mm-hmm. Is this actually happening or is this all imagination?
Yeah. Which to back up, right? For the audience out there, Donnie Darko, our protagonist, is clinically, I think bipolar schizophrenic.
Schizophrenic. He was
paranoid schizophrenic, and he has visions. And so at first you don't see him, right? He gets up at the beginning of the movie in the middle of the night and he just sleepwalks out into the middle of nowhere.
How about that opening shot though?
It's one of my favorite opening shots of a film ever. That opening sequence, he's by himself asleep on the road with beautiful, I guess it's Pennsylvania.
It was awesome landscape.
So good.
The rolling mountains in the background and all the misty, kind of fog feel of the early morning. That was all killer.
I know. And after being in the Texas heat this summer for,
made you want to go there.
125 days so far, that scene really hit hard for me last night.
Yeah. Just warm or not even warm enough, but just cool enough to be able to sleep outside.
Cool mornings kind of deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't do that here. You would just die.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But
I woke up this morning at 7 and it was 85 degrees outside already.
Yeah, I walked out of my door and immediately started sweating.
Yep.
It's brutal. Yep. But back to that opening shot, it really gave away kind of the vibe for the film right off the bat with the cinematography and the lighting and whatever they did with, I don't know if it was the lighting or if it was the color grade, but it was really dark kind of.
There's a texture.
Shadows.
There's a texture to it.
Tons of texture. Yeah. But it was also really low light. Mm-hmm. When I was watching it, I wish it was, able to be seen in theaters because I feel like a theater environment might have made that a lot easier to be in that kind of dark vibe for the film.
100%. And I think on the show notes, you put one of your favorite scenes was the one in the theater, right?
Oh yeah.
And so a few years ago they did at Texas Theater, which in Dallas, they did a 20th anniversary film screening of Donnie Darko.
Oh no shit.
And I went with Amanda, and it was I actually didn't see it in theaters. I saw it after it dropped, which is how most people saw it, because it had a terrible box office.
I was gonna touch on that, but I can save it for a bit.
Save it. To your point, to watch it in a theater was really, really cool for the 20th anniversary.
Yeah. And actually, the theater that they shot the theater scene at, that's the Aero Theater in Santa Monica. And actually, last time you and I were in LA for a shoot, when I was killing time before my flight and I was just out driving around. I drove past it on accident. Oh, totally nice. Didn't even mean to. But then as I saw that when I was like doing my research, I was like, I know exactly where that is.
Donnie
I was there.
Darko still just leaving breadcrumbs in real life.
Just breadcrumbs everywhere. It was so cool. But with the box, what ended up being like a huge problem for them and why it didn't do very well in the box office was obviously because it's released early or late 2001, right around, you know, September 11th.
Yeah.
So a lot of their promo and everything had to do with like, it was a jet engine and Donnie was like the main poster. So they had to pull all of their marketing. They didn't have a lot of press around it. And then they just like, there was no hype about
that. I actually didn't realize that until last night when I Googled it.
Really?
I had no idea. I knew at the time.
You just didn't put it together kind
of? Yeah, no. So I saw it. My first viewing of it was double fucked up because my friend Josh was the one who introduced me to it in college. And we had like, we'd gone out to like some party and done, you know, hooligan college stuff and came back different than we left. And he's like, why don't we just throw on this lighthearted movie, Donnie Darko? And I fell asleep during like the beginning of it at some point. I had no frame of reference, had never really heard of it. And I woke up to like, I think it was like the scene where he's stabbing Frank the rabbit
through the mirror.
Through the mirror. And I was like already in a daze and then waking up. And that was my first introduction to that movie, was basically that scene that way.
You know what? To be honest,
I feel like that
after watching it straight, it doesn't feel that much different than it sounds like your experience was.
Yeah.
It's probably about the same.
I'm going to skip around on the little docket real quick to where this movie excels and where it kind of falls flat. It excels in where it falls flat. I know that sounds weird, but I think one of the reasons why it is so good is because it doesn't do a lot of the normal things that stories do to tell it, is try to explain everything. It doesn't care if, at least the non-director's cut, doesn't care if you don't understand what's happening. That's kind of at least in my point of view of watching it, that's what the point is like, you're not really supposed to know what's happening. You have to figure that out yourself and you have to decide for yourself what's actually happening. And one of the things that it does really well to help get that point across is the fact it's told in a very jump cut straight to the next sequence kind of way. I can't think of a single part of this movie where it gives context for the next scene. It feels like a play.
Yeah.
Feels like a play on screen. Is you have a sequence that's happening, jump cut to the next sequence.
Mm-hmm. Or it's doing those parallel cuts to where it's like, think about when...
like the movie theater scene, kind of?
Yes, kind of like that. But the scene I was going to bring up was when the parents are at the therapist's office and Donnie's like stabbing the rabbit through the mirror or whatever.
Or like when the sparkle motion like dance is happening at the same time he's burning down Cunningham's house.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like it'll do those kind of like parallel jump cuts for like space and time. And it's like that actually adds to the time. I didn't even catch that until like right now. That's cool. Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
It just tells the story in a way that conventionally doesn't make sense. They're giving you zero context for anything, but that's what makes it so good.
Go ahead.
No, it's good. It's just, I don't know. It just makes it give you that. It puts you in a POV of Donnie, kind of like he doesn't understand what's happening. Really.
He's solving the puzzle with
his mind. At least what I get from watching that is like, his mind is working like that. Like he's not taking continuity in the next thing he's doing. It's just going from one thing to another with zero continuity between any of them.
Yeah.
Like he randomly, like when they're watching the football game, he randomly goes to his parents' room and gets the gun. And then that's the last thing we see until he pulls it out.
Yeah.
Spoiler, shoots Frank in the suit. Like there's no continuity or context for anything. It just goes.
Grandma Death, when Grandma Death whispers to Donnie whatever she whispers, and it's like immediately his dad's like, well, what did she say? And it just boom, cut.
Yeah. And then you find out later, right? Exactly. I think it does a great job of like it leaves enough unanswered, but like it does answer enough stuff later that it starts to like connect the dots again, like that puzzle, disjointed kind of puzzle.
It's
piece.
Almost telling it in a non-linear storyline. Even though it is linear of like what's happening during
you're watching him in order.
Yeah. you're watching him in order, but you're not learning about the movie in order. Like no. You're learning everything out of order and like random things.
And you're learning it in real time with him too, which I think is fascinating. Yeah. I think one of the things I was going to say is I think that the reason that works is because when Richard Kelly wrote it, like you can tell under the surface of what you're seeing, there's like a mythos. Like he's worked it. He's not giving you everything, right? Mm-hmm. He knows Grandma Death's backstory. Like she, I don't know if you got this deep, but the book that Roberta Sparrow wrote, mm-hmm. The Philosophy of Time Travel, Richard, you can find chapters of it online.
No
it's not
way.
A real book, obviously, but like he wrote out, there's like 10 chapters or something that you can read of her book.
Okay. I love when like prop people always go in and like have to like physically write out parts of these books because it's sometimes like they'll literally just be writing like random gibberish on the pages leading up to it. Like I can't remember what movie it was from, but you see it. It's like a movie that opening scene, it's like a fairy tale type book that opens. And if you look and pause on the left side, it's like the prop master. He's like, what the fuck is this fucking bullshit? I gotta waste this time all doing this. And it's caught in screen and it's in a PG movie.
That's amazing. That's
hilarious.
Yeah.
I think the best one for a prop master ever has to be the Shining.
Oh yeah.
What does he say? He says all work and no play makes Jack a
dull boy.
A dull boy.
Yeah.
And it's just like that over and over pages. That's gotta be a nice one. You just copy and paste.
Yeah. Well, unless it's freehand.
Well, yeah.
I mean, yeah, probably.
Well, it wasn't freehand. It was on the typewriter.
Whatever, dude.
Which I guess you can't copy.
Yeah, you can't copy and paste. That's digital.
Type that out a lot.
Dude, no, there's obviously like a ton of characters within this story, and mm-hmm. a lot of them are really interesting. And mm-hmm. Donnie excluded. Like, exclude Donnie from this. Mm-hmm. Who would you say was like one of your favorite characters?
It's a good question.
I've got one if you're still thinking.
I feel like the obvious answer is, what's her name? The
Kitty? The teacher?
Yes, but also, who's his girlfriend?
Gretchen.
Gretchen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gretchen.
That's funny because there was also a Gretchen in the other movie we had to watch on the same week.
Yeah.
That's why I was like confused. I was like, is it? I wanted to say it was Gretchen, but I couldn't remember if it was.
What she says in the movie, I think she says it like, that's not her real name, right? Like she's like in
no,
like yeah, they're witness, like changing their name.
They're
yeah.
like in witness protection without being in witness protection.
Yeah.
Like that. Sorry, what was the question?
Favorite character.
Favorite character that's not Donnie.
It's not Donnie. This isn't my favorite character, but I thought it was really surprising seeing Seth Rogen in not a Seth Rogen role.
Oh my God. This was his first feature film that he was a part of. And the first line he ever says in cinema in his career is, I like your boobs. It's phenomenal. And it's so on brand for who Seth Rogen is. And
it's amazing that after this movie, he got any other role.
Right?
I mean,
well, it's like when I was watching it and I just saw him as like a background character. It was just like, that looks like young Seth Rogen. Oh, my God. And then it gets to the scene when he's like talking to Gretchen, actually. Or whatever, and like Donnie comes rolling up, and I was like, I heard the, I heard his laugh, and I was like, that's fucking him.
The movie Loki has a great cast.
It does.
What's Noah, the guy from ER back in the day, Noah, whatever his name is, and then, well, I'm really doing great on the names. What's the teacher's name?
Drew Barrymore. Also, I think Jake Gyllenhaal's sister playing his sister in the movie.
I love that they did
that.
They
play siblings in a lot of movies, actually.
Well, I mean, they're both really, really talented actors.
Incredible. Yeah.
And I never really thought that they were siblings. Like, I always was just like, damn, that's a coincidence.
You're a Gyllenhaal denier?
Well, I wouldn't say denier. It was just like, no, I never like researched them to connect the dots. I was always
Todd didn't
like,
do research? What the fuck?
I didn't research the Gyllenhaal family. No.
Got it. Wow.
Yeah.
Who's my favorite character? I don't know. Maybe the teacher, because she's just like so random. Like
the Kitty, the psycho one. Is that who you're talking about? Or do you mean
Kitty, the psycho one? Is that the
sparkle motion?
No. I mean, I don't know. I don't know who my, like, I kind of don't like any of the characters, but that's why I like all of them, kind of.
Did you mean the Drew Barrymore teacher?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think, yes, that's who I'm talking about. But I think she's my favorite character because it's like, so like, where the fuck is she coming from? Like, as a teacher feel so like
so okay I think random. This is so one of the things I think this movie does well, like Richard Kelly clearly has, I'd say, like a love for this time period, but he's like, I think, trying to expose like a lot of the realities of what was going on without really commenting on it too much. And I think like there's a scene with the other teacher where they start talking about time travel and it starts getting into talk about religion and God. And he's like, I can't talk to you about this. Right. And I think there's just like a lot of the other teacher's frustrations are that, you know, she's not able to teach in the way that she feels is actually beneficial for these students. There's, I don't remember what the line is exactly, but she says something like, you know, when she gets fired that, you know, we're failing these children. They're growing up apathetic. And I wrote it in my notes. I might look here in a second, but
it's the most religious, non-religious movie I think I've ever watched. Mm-hmm.
But to your point of the science teacher, I was going to say he's one of my two favorite characters.
He's
that's
great.
Not Donnie, because all of their dialogue and like the conversation, it was always like really engaging, but it was also like honest and just like, just kind of like felt natural. And so each interaction that like he and Donnie had was always really good. And it was like some of my favorite scenes, but I would say my overall favorite character that's not Donnie, Charita.
Charita's great.
Cause she's just there and she's a part of everything. Like she's seeing all of these different things going on. And
her
it kind of makes me question if she's like a figment of imagination.
There's actually been so like out of place, like in a good way.
I think it ties it back to like the reality of high school though.
Yes. Yeah. Fully. Yeah, so I was reading actually about that this morning because she's always been like the one piece of the movie that didn't
like make
fit
sense
in, or make sense. Yeah. Like it was like she's so intentionally put in the middle of scenes, but I never really knew why. And so there's been like a lot of discussion on like forums and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it seems like what a lot of people, there's like some wilder theories about aliens and stuff out there that I'm not even going to give weight to. But like
I have a theory and I'll talk about it later, but.
So there's some of it is some of the discussion is basically saying like she almost mirrors Donnie. Like she's this innocent character. He's an outsider. She's an outsider. She's constantly getting made fun of and shit on, and she's not doing anything to deserve it. Right.
Right.
She's just this outsider girl that is very, very innocent. You see it even in her performance. She does this like heartfelt thing that's very different and nobody in the crowd really cares. And she clearly has a huge crush on Donnie. We find out later in the movie when, you know, she drops her books or whatever and she's drawn his name.
Well, she had like a whole file folder on him. She had his file.
Yeah.
That it wasn't even just like, it didn't feel like a casual high school crush. It felt like way
creepier. That
was
deep love.
Yeah, that is deep rooted. And it's like,
did it? Because I didn't get that.
She's going to steal locks of hair.
Interesting. I didn't get that vibe.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't. I kind of just felt like more it was one of her textbooks and she just had like a textbook cover on it. Like people used to do all the time. Yeah.
What was up with that?
And just kind of doodled on it.
So, okay. This ties back into that she's getting, so I don't know if this is true. This is like not from Richard Kelly or anything, but
it could be like a Reddit theory that
literally
delve deep on.
Literally read it this morning on Reddit. That because she's constantly getting like assaulted with like verbal like meanness and like getting made fun of, that she wears the earmuffs to like kind of block people out.
That's fair. I can see that.
I can see that. Yeah. Well, but on one of the scenes where she's like outside on the lockers when Donnie's inside talking to like the science teacher, they don't like mute any of the audio or anything like that. So it like the first time I saw her in the earmuffs, I was like, are these like surveillance earmuffs? Is she like tapping in through the locker to like listen in on this convo? Because then it makes the file folder seem a little more realistic.
Deeper theories suggest that she's like some kind of like sleeper cell or something like that.
Like there's just so much like so many questions I had about her character that I was like, there's layers to this.
So and the other character, do you remember the scene where Donnie's talking to Gretchen? I think they're talking about sex actually, but she's like, she has this thing where she's like, I want it to be perfect or beautiful.
Oh, and the
first scene. And then there's the guy, that's like the one scene he's in. It's just this like fat guy in a track suit. Yeah.
He's also at the Halloween party too.
He's at the Halloween party.
But he's just standing there and he serves no purpose, but I guess like awkward, really comedy relief.
Yeah, literally. It was just
that,
like,
this movie did a lot of that really well. But going back to the thing with, I just think she was just, I think she developed a crush on him because he was the only person nice to her.
100%.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's anything more than that. I think it was just like,
he was the only one who defended her, didn't make fun of her.
Yeah. And I don't think, like, you guys is like, it was a big book that she dropped and had his name on it. Again, I just think it was like a book cover. Like, I don't think it, like, it was a book of him.
Yeah, no, I
like,
always
who
felt
would, who, like, even if you're crazy, who's going to carry around a book like with all the evidence of all the really crazy shit you've done with you, like, and then just drop it and leave it?
I don't know. Like burn book, Mean Girls.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they didn't do that on purpose. Like, they didn't leave that around, right? She did that on purpose to get back at somebody. Right?
I mean, so, fair enough.
I don't know. I just think it was like a lot more innocent than that. I think like you were saying earlier, she's kind of like the same thing as Donnie a little bit, the outsider, the outcast. And he sees her like in a similar light. He doesn't make fun of her at all because he's like, understands like how she feels kind of.
Yep.
And then he like randomly just goes like, everything's going to be better for you. Yep. Like, I promise in the future or whatever. And then she gets like, nobody ever talks to her that directly really. And or about like, it sucks right now, but
it's going to get better.
It's going to get better.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
which is, by the way, that's what Grandma Death whispered in his ear. That's what Roberta Sparrow whispered in his ear, was that line word for word. It was like, something along the lines of what you just said. It's like everything's going to be okay or whatever it was.
I thought it was revealed that she whispers, everybody dies alone or something.
Every living creature on earth dies alone.
No, you're right.
Every living creature on earth dies alone. Which, oh my God, sorry. That reminded me of, so y'all know what's up with like the numbers they gave, right?
They gave numbers of what?
Tell us.
Like the 28 days, 6 hours, 42 minutes and 20 seconds.
I didn't really pay attention to that until the very end when that's when she gets hit by the car.
Gotcha. So I wrote it down the first time the rabbit fucker said that thing. And so looked into why
Frank,
it was important.
Frank.
Yes. Thank you.
Rabbit fucker.
But no, I looked into why Frank was saying that.
Sorry. Is that an adjective? Is that a descriptor? Or is that like,
yeah, like I feel a like verb? You shouldn't dive what? Too deep into that one, big dog.
That's how Frank was made.
That's, yeah. But anyways, 28 days, 6 hours, 42 minutes and 20 seconds. That's like a old calendar month back in like the way olden days. So that's how it ties into like the demonic rabbit is like, you know, any of
it's
those like old school satanic people follow like the archaic calendars.
Got it.
Yeah.
Satanic people.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it was like just an old school calendar month. What?
Pagan. I think you mean pagan.
Yeah.
Non-Judeo-Christian.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know the word. I'm not like super tied
like,
with that.
Like, it would be weird to have a non-Christian person be satanic in a way.
Yeah, it would be weird because Satan exists in Christianity.
Yeah, yeah,
that not
is
necessarily
weird.
Like a pagan religion.
That is weird. But oh my God. Sorry.
That's fair.
One of my favorite one-liners from this whole movie is when Donnie is walking with Gretchen for the first time. And Gretchen's like talking about her dad or whatever. And she's like, oh yeah, he has mental problems. And Donnie's
like,
just
I
like,
too.
I have those too. What kind does he have? And I was like, that is so like upfront and honest. And he's just like, yeah, dude, mental problems. That's my alley. Like,
it's so
up?
Great. He's like so bad at like relating and communicating with people in the real world.
Yeah.
And I think like you see it more and more. He becomes like more and more like to himself and then more like outwardly like aggressive and frustrated with others as the movie goes on. But like when he is engaging with people, it's like genuinely like awkward.
Oh, so awkward. And it's so fun. Like, I love that.
Awkward unless he's like talking about something like serious. Then it goes from being awkward to like, honestly, some of the most like thought provoking things you might say, like when his friends were talking about the Smurf thing. It's like, what's
great
like,
scene.
Like that. Yeah, it is a great scene. It's just like. It's like,
so I think that's the difference, right? He's social, right? Like he doesn't know if he has to be social with a person one-on-one or in a group, like he can't do it well. But when he's talking about something that he knows or has thought about deeply, he can go off.
Yeah.
But yeah. Which still, is why he went off on the Smurfs. He put a lot of thought into the Smurf thing.
He really deconstructed Smurfs and Smurf
that
sexuality.
That was more information about Smurfs than I would ever have known about.
Yeah.
Or
like
even
I didn't even realize
about.
That Gargamel had made.
I didn't know that either.
Smurfette.
I also didn't necessarily know that Smurfs were asexual without reproductive organs.
Well,
but
I don't think
like,
we can prove that.
I don't think anyone's ever really
either,
like.
I mean, like, it seemed like he had a pretty valid explanation for it.
Yeah, so. He sent Smurfette to infiltrate.
I mean, if they don't have any, like, who's.
And then she liked Smurf culture. So she was like, this is chill, dude. I'm just going to hang around.
She was
here.
So overwhelmed with the Smurf way of life.
Yeah, this is, you know, we all just chill out in mushrooms and just help each other out. It's good vibes.
Sounds like Todd's kind of...
Todd is a Smurf.
That would be my commune, dude. Are you kidding? That would be sick.
I want to go back to the opening, like that opening scene you mentioned earlier, real quick. Because I think one of the things that is, I don't know if it's important, but it is important in how the movie feels, is the way they bring you into the time period and into the mood with the music. So like the opening scene hits and I can't remember which song it is right out of the gate, but there's several scenes where the music hits at a certain time. And if you look into like any of the songs, like it's like Echo and the Bunnymen, The Killing Moon and Tears for Fears, like a lot of these songs reference like time and a lot of the themes of the movie, like are actually themes of the songs or references in the songs. And so it's like the movie just kind of like builds on itself with all the little different elements. There's like there's little Easter eggs of time travel, like on the board, or like Graham Greene's The Destructors being talked about in the class.
Even the movies on the marquee in the theater.
Even the movies. Yeah. It's Evil Dead and The like Last Temptation of Christ. Yeah. Right. So it's like, it's always touching back on the themes in little ways that may not even be like substantial in any way.
No, but they're like micro elements that like really assist like the story that they're trying to tell.
Yeah.
One of the things to go with that, I think the movie does really well is it makes the world feel really real.
Mm-hmm.
Like all those things that you're talking about, that helps the world be developed and make it feel like it's not shot in 2001, make it feel like it's actually from that time period. But also at the same time, for me at least, it didn't feel like it mattered when it was, almost.
No,
like
I don't think it would have.
It doesn't play like Stranger Things is something that plays on that world. It feels like you're at that time, but it also feels like it's really important that you're at that time. Versus Donnie Darko, sure, it has all these things that build the world to be that time period, but at the same time, like, almost none of it matters to the story, kind of. Like,
the only part of the time period that matters is because of the presidential election.
Sure.
That would be, like, the only thing that really grounds it or makes it have to be at that time.
And then again, it's also unimportant, too.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't... You could tell this story at any time period. It doesn't matter when.
Do you think that they did
told that
intentionally, or was that an accident? Because I think, like,
then
one
it
of
doesn't
the things,
matter when it is?
It, yeah, kind of like... So, a lot of the movie plays on the idea of, like, predestination or fate versus, like, free will and free choice. You know, part... Like, even when he's talking about time travel, like, there's, like, lots of versions of time travel that are, like, kind of easy to pick apart when you get too deep. But, like... He's talking about traveling through God's channel and all these things. And you were talking about this, the scene where the thing comes out of his chest and he's like, he's following it, right? Like that's fate if he follows it. But if he chooses not to, he's not following fate, right?
But then how do you choose not to follow fate if that's how it's supposed to
look? Right. And so like the whole movie plays on that. And so I wonder if there's an element of like, they're showing you these, there's important things. There's just like, touches on things that are happening in that time period a lot. Like even that discussion with the science teacher.
A little satanic panic kind
satanic
of stuff
panic.
Going on.
Or even like that I don't know when this happened, but at some point we made a decision that, you know, at school we shouldn't talk about, you know, or include religion in, you know, politics in school and stuff.
And there's also the two like very different, like, I feel like the, that religion, the science teacher is like, I can't talk to you about this, but also at the same time, like, half of the teachers still are talking about that and like pushing it really hard. And it's like the one with the sparkle, whatever, sparkle motion, like she's really pushing like the religious speak and like stuff at school. And then also the random like speaker that they bring in is seemed kind of like a preacher slash like a self-help
guru,
but like also kind of like religious-y without being explicitly religious.
There's like a
just a lot of stuff kind of, I feel like that's all super relevant to that time period.
Right.
Of kind of that like anti-Satan, but like wasn't specifically saying that kind of deal. It was like, you can't be like that.
And so to come full circle on the, where I was going with that, and not just leaving that thread hanging too long. So all those feel like big, important discussion points for periods of time. Right. And we have them like all throughout history, but like in the scope of this movie, none of that shit matters because there's this one thing happening with Donnie that only Donnie is clued in on.
Mm-hmm.
And literally all of life is going to cease to exist. The world's going to end. and all these people are thinking all these other things are important, right? And there's like this bigger thing happening. And so I kind of was tying that back to like, do you think that they maybe like put some of those like little breadcrumby important, like the like people are obsessed about politics, religion,
like wanting to ban the book that
says and they're completely missing this larger thing that's happening.
Yeah, like what's that song? The World's on Fire. What was that one? They just remade it recently with like new stuff. I forget what's
with called. New stuff.
The world's always been on fire, but we didn't start the fire. What is it called?
We didn't start the fire.
We didn't start the fire. I don't know why that was so hard for me to remember. But it kind of feels like that. It's almost like all of these problems are happening in the world, but like, does that matter if the world's kind of ending kind of deal? Like all of these different problems, I don't know. It's like, do all these little things matter? Does it matter who wins the election if it's just going to end in 28 days? No, it doesn't. Like kind of deal. But at the same time, if you guys are cool, I kind of want to talk about my theory about the movie.
Yeah.
I think he's actually just schizophrenic.
Fascinating.
Like, the more I was kind of watching it, like, the later it got, I was like, at first, like, yeah, he's schizophrenic. And then at first, like, is it time travel? Or, like, kind of in the middle. And then towards the end, I'm like, no, he's definitely just schizophrenic. Because I think they talk about how he's been reading a lot more. He talks about how he's been reading books more. And in my mind, maybe he found that book, read that book, and all of that stuff he's picturing is because he read that book, but didn't tell himself he read that book. So everything he's seeing, like the threads of time moving forward, he's just picturing that. He saw his dad walk into the kitchen, but in his mind, he's remembering it.
Even the gun in the closet. Like even if he didn't like know it was there,
like he probably knew
subconsciously, knew something was hidden there.
And he's like living in the past. He's living like moments in the past as they're happening almost. Like his dad is walking to the kitchen to go grab a beer or whatever. But like he's seeing that happen. And in his mind, he's picturing that he's watching his dad do it before he does it kind of deal. Like he's watching the thread happen.
So
because he's like schizophrenic. So he's hallucinating and seeing these things. So in his mind, he's seeing that he saw it first when in reality he didn't. And I think if he talked about how he read a lot, he's been reading a lot more since like whatever in the kind of the beginning of the movie, and you see him reading a book, and I wish I remembered what book that was, because imagine if it was that book.
It was not the Roberta Spira book.
It wasn't, but I could see him having found that book, read it, and then everything he's imagining is true because of that. Oh, because time travel? No, because he's schizophrenic and imagining that's actually what's happening to him.
I can see that theory.
I don't know. I just kind of think that he's just picturing all of these things.
He's reading Watership Down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just, that's kind of my theory. I feel like it fits the movie's vibe a little more. Like, sure, it could totally be like, how do you explain the ending with that theory? Well, it's just like, it's another hallucination of his kind of deal. Like, it's just like,
I think like that's the part that like breaks that theory for me, is that if you walk it all the way out to the end, like, it starts over, right? And then he dies. So then the whole thing would have just been imagined. Because at the end, he dies. He gets hit by the plane engine.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. At the same time, it doesn't necessarily have to make sense.
Right? I was also going to say it could be like a potential theory of like what happens when you die. You relive like the alternative outcome of what would have happened if you didn't.
There's like, I've heard, like, I forget where I heard it. I heard it a long time ago. But it's like every time a new parallel universe is created when you like die, but like you move on to the next one where you would have kept living. Like if you got in a car accident, that version of you died, but then your consciousness was transferred to the new universe where you didn't die or something like that.
Who knows?
Maybe something like that.
What if you could keep some of your memories when you change universes too?
So that is an element. So like having read Roberta Sparrow's book,
the handful of pages
that exist out there. So like her like theories on time travel are that basically if something happens in your like primary universe that wasn't supposed to happen, again, like toying with fate here, that this tangential universe is created. So Donnie sleepwalking out of the room when he should have died from that plane engine falling in his bedroom shifted his fate.
Got
and
it.
So the rest of the film after that moment, you're in a tangent universe. And because of this rift now in time, the entire universe or the entire both planets are going to die. And so Donnie now, the only person who's clued in at all because of Frank, like speaking to him through his visions, the only way to save everybody in both universes is for him to sacrifice himself, almost like Jesus Christ-like sacrifice, to put it all back the way it was supposed to be.
So
damn, that's wild. But also the timeline with the tangents brings a callback to the love and hate being a single line.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Donnie's arguing the fact that, like, no, there's more complexities to that.
Yeah.
That makes me think, like, the way that they're picturing time and time travel is very much the fine line, but then the parallels of the tangents create those parallel universes. So it's like a little extra layer that they threw in there. Yeah. Like, that's cool.
Yeah. I just think, like, I don't know. Does the movie also have to have, like, a theory of is it actually happened or not? Can it just be what it is?
I think it can just be,
I think it'd be what it is. Because
I feel like a folly that a lot of people like coming into is they need to justify what happens and what happens in the universe. What's canonically right? Does it have to have a right answer canonically, or can it just be what it is?
I think one of the most fun things about this movie for me is exactly what you're talking about, that you can have this conversation and make everybody's head spin for like an hour and nobody know at the end, it like really knows what is right.
Yeah. Like everybody could go for their hard sell on what theory they believe and do everything they can to convince the other person, but everybody's still going to have their own thought as to what the movie actually was.
Because I feel like fun with it. You could find something in this movie that breaks every theory. As far as like I thought of, like, what in your theory, how does Frank know that like sets the world on right path?
Yeah, so it gets a little deeper because Richard Kelly kind of like,
so it seems like
gave us too much information of what his thinking was afterwards.
So it seems like he decided on what it was supposed to be. But
yeah, I think I think Donnie is schizophrenic. But
that also just happens to be not relevant to what happens.
But in the story, maybe that's what helps him like be open to seeing
his mind sees the future because he's less cognitively like.
And I don't know that Richard ever said like definitively like this is 100% what it is, but I think maybe he was at least explaining like the other side of it, like if he's not just schizophrenic, this is how it works kind of thing.
Does the director's cut like elaborate on his like pills? Because it's like
every time
the first
Frank comes in there and traps him,
it's after he took his pills at night, but also like whatever opening scene, he's like, oh, I stopped taking my pills. So like, was he sleepwalking because he wasn't taking his pills? Because it seems like he's sleepwalking because of taking the pills.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's like even like a fake plot device, like a red herring.
Yeah.
Like if you're like, oh, is it the pills? Oh, he's not taking his pills. And then like, maybe it's not relevant to anything at all. I have no idea.
Yeah. Cause it's like,
cause at the beginning of the movie, he says that he stopped, or his sister says he stopped taking his pills.
Yep.
But he's seeing the visions. So you're like, okay, is that where it starts? But then you watch him the rest of the movie and he's taking the pills and he's still seeing.
And the visions are getting worse.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. That's why I think he's actually just schizophrenic and he's just seeing things, right? But at the same time, it doesn't have to necessarily be anything either. It could just be a story, and it's a great story because it creates stuff like this. You're talking about it.
Bringing up the sister at that dinner table in the opening.
Yeah.
That was like for you on your first watch. Cause for me, it was like a full on shock when I got to the dinner table and like Jake Gyllenhaal starts talking and it was like, oh my God, what? Cause it was just like, stop being such a fuck ass.
Yeah.
And then like, she's like,
you can go suck a fuck.
Yeah. You can suck a fuck. And like the little daughter is like, whatever, like, you know, and the dad's sitting there like earmuffs, whatever.
I love the whole family. I love the dad. I feel like the dad is,
he lost control and was like, it's just going to happen.
I think one of the things about this movie that I really like is that this could have been like a really heavy, really dark story all the way through, but there's so many silly and ridiculous conversations, pop culture Smurf sex references, And like the dad is
just
like
the
one
fat
of those
guys staring at him about to have their first kiss.
Yeah.
Like yeah.
Moments right. like that.
Silly shit. And the dad is like one of those constant moments of levity where like his family's so out of control and he just kind of like laughs at all of it. Mm-hmm. Like even the scene, like how relatable is this when you're like a teenager, like struggling with whatever.
Trying to swear and fuck
and at
up.
The beginning of the movie, when his mom is like trying to talk to him and she leaves and he's bitch. Like, bitch, and she hears it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, I know that feeling as the teenager, yeah. but that probably really sucked for her. And then the dad's like,
you're bitching, but you're not a bitch. I was like, that was such a great line of commentary
so
in
good.
The delivery of him just like laying on the bed, like, whatever, like just kind of like.
and you know, in that moment, at least for me, maybe it was different for you guys, but when he said bitch and he knew his mom heard and at the same time, he's like. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, he's like,
he felt bad.
He's like, fuck. Like, I didn't really want to say that.
I've definitely done that. I mean, I don't know if it's like word for word like that, but you definitely have those moments, especially as a teenager, where you're like,
you like say something like that and you're like, yeah. And then you think about it, you're like,
I'm a jerk.
Yeah. Like, that was not valid for that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think that really at the beginning of the movie is great because it goes to that family dinner. And so I didn't realize at first on my first watch that, like, they were siblings at like that table because it felt so disconnected. And I think that's part of the reason why they started the movie that way is like the family's at the house. And then he just comes in, where's Donnie? And then they're at the dinner table. And it's like,
which I love that little board on the fridge. That's always got the little like cryptic. Yeah.
Where's
notes.
Donnie?
Where's Donnie?
It's just like, it felt so disconnected. His sister going to school or whatever. And he's like coming back on the bike. And I was like, I didn't realize that's where he went. Was that home? Maybe I just like missed.
So did you connect to that? So she's out on a date. The night that, like, the very beginning of the movie, when the airplane crashes or the jet engine crashes.
That's why she's coming back.
She's coming back from a date with Frank.
Oh, really?
She was on a date with Frank. That was his car.
I did not know that.
Okay, yeah, because I know that they showed the car that runs over Gretchen. I knew they showed that earlier in the movie. But also, when you brought up the fridge whiteboard, did you see that the handwriting of, like, went to pick up beer.
Frank was here.
That was
and
Frank.
It matched the graffiti at the statue. Also, out of all of the like crimes that Donnie committed in his sleep, I would say the copper statue with the spray paint was probably my favorite because of the line that they were like, that's solid bronze.
Yeah.
Like, how did he get that in there? It was just like, does he have demon strength?
Are you talking about the axe?
Yeah. But like, I'm not going to lie. Like, on the opening scene, the typography for it just to say Donnie Darko, I was like, this is kind of trash. But then as I saw like them using that font throughout the film, I was like, makes sense. Yeah. And near the end, once I saw the like font spray painted, I was like, that's gnarly. But also, I feel like that was the inspo for like Monster Energy Drink.
I think Monster existed before this movie.
Probably.
This is 2001.
They may have been birthed around the same time. I don't know.
Yeah.
2001. I think Monster existed before that. I think Monster was like in the
90s. Well, I mean, Red Bull was the first ever energy drink, and that started in 1986.
90s? Oh, 80s, yeah. Damn.
Okay. So Monster.
But it didn't make its way to the US until the 90s. Why do I know this? I have no idea.
I don't know. Why don't you know more about Monster?
Yeah. Clearly, I'm not doing
please
the research
us,
in the right spaces.
Red Bull.
Yeah, please. I called you guys multiple times. You never called me back. No, there's like a ton of like really cool, interesting moments. Do you guys ever
2002.
Wish 2002?
Hey, Monster? So they were about the same time.
There is a possibility where they're inspired by that.
Did we stumble
logo.
Upon a conspiracy here?
Have you ever seen, okay, this is totally unrelated, but have you ever seen that video of the lady like explaining how like Monster's logo is like the devil or something?
Oh, yeah,
like that?
Yeah. How it has like 666
so
and the iconography and everything.
Yeah, it's like, this is the Hebrew letter for like the devil or something. I was like, why can't it just be an M with a claw that like ripped it out? Yeah. Like, can it not just be like that?
Yeah. My question, I was just
that lady
ask you guys,
from the video. Sorry. That lady from the video reminds me of
the teacher
from the Sparkles dance.
Which
team
who movie. Has, she has one of the best lines in the whole movie when, the pedo's house gets burned down and she still believes in him.
Oh, Jim Cunningham's.
Yeah. Jim Cunningham's. And then she goes to Donnie's mom to be like, hey, like, do you know what an opportunity is for these girls? They've worked so hard. You got to go to LA with them. And she's like, Kitty, it's not a good time. And Kitty's like, I'm starting to doubt your commitment to Sparkle Motion or something like that. It's like the best line in the movie.
That's a good one.
See, I would have like, if I was also, the mom in that situation, I'd have been like, tough tits, figure it out. Like
100%.
I'm not going. That's not my shit.
Starting to doubt your commitment to Spark Emotions going. But also she goes, out of all the dance mobs, you're the last right. one I would come to.
Yeah. But the others couldn't do it.
She clearly was never in sales. It was a really bad lead in.
Out of all the dance mobs, you expect this to be like, oh, you're the first person I come
you
to.
You were the last.
You're
one.
The last person I would come to.
I would
to.
Never ask you this.
Yeah.
Oh, no. But the question I was about to ask was, did you guys ever want to find out like where the jet engine came from?
Yes. Well, we did find out where it came from. It came from his mom and sister's flight back to LA.
How did I miss that?
It's what happens at the end. Well, it's kind of hard to tell.
It's a quick moment.
It's another one of those like.
Then what happened to their plane?
We don't know what happened to their plane because he goes back in time before like anything happens. Because
so at the very end, when he's sitting with dead Gretchen on his car.
In the car? Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah. And I see the plane flying towards the like vortex tornado situations happening. I think he kind of like wills that thing back through the portal to kind of go back in time, kill OG Donnie and reset the timeline.
Damn. Yeah. Okay. That's wild.
Yeah. So it's real quick that happens. It's not very like, if you like blinked, you could miss the 100%. Fact that it was his mom and his sister's plane.
Yeah.
Because it's like, they're at the airport. She leaves the voicemail, whatever. It goes to all Donnie's everything, sitting in the car, sitting on like where he first, I think it's where the movie opens.
Yeah.
That same place where he's chilling in the car with Gretchen.
Another like beautiful, like circular moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it cuts to the mom and sister in the plane with a little bit of turbulence. And then like, she kind of grabs her and then it like goes to like a wide of like the engine falling.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, if we're being realistic about it, if the engine fell off for some reason, the plane could still fly regardless. Yeah. So it could have been totally fine. Survived, otherwise, like planes can fly on one engine only.
I know. It's just wild that the engine would detach, but the wing would be intact.
It's called a plot point.
I like poking holes.
That's fair.
Sorry.
Fair. Also, there was no like connection point when the engine was taken on the truck. It was just a turbine with no like, how is it hooked to
the
wing?
It wasn't ratcheted there was none on of that. There or anything.
There's no, it was just there was no mounting point for the engine to be on the wing. Like, because the engines are mounted on the wing. That just kind of bugged me because like there's no point where it's like it was just the turbine full circle with no like mounting like
so,
point on there. It kind of bugged me. I was like, why? Like
some of these points, I'm not even going to get into it, but because it goes back to like that, like director's cut and over explaining things a little bit of like what his thinking was for like the parallel universe shit. Some of that stuff probably could be explained away. Cause there's like an element of like, if Donnie is kind of like the savior of this new world and he's granted like extra powers, like some of it is maybe his like visions or whatever. And then the other like element of that is that like it makes sense, like looking back at everything that happens in the film, the way he's guided by the other characters. So like I just said, I wouldn't explain all this and now I'm doing it. My bad. But basically like all these people in this like secondary, like tangent universe, like, they don't know something's wrong, but they know something's wrong. And
they all
like
kind of like
guided.
Feed information
they're
via like their fate or something.
Yeah, they're felt. They have their own fate of like helping. Basically, for them to all survive in the original universe and everything to not be destroyed, they have to help guide Donnie to the ultimate decision of sacrificing himself for any of them to exist at all.
So it's all fate, kind of.
Kind of.
So
yeah.
The cellar door. She writes that on the board because of that reason. She's guiding him to take Gretchen there.
Right.
Gretchen gets
and
hit
I looked
by the
that
car.
Up. That's actually a thing, like a linguistic thing that a lot of people consider just phonetically those letters and those cellar sounds door. Together.
It sounds French.
That it's like
it does. I
it
was
does.
Thinking the same thing. Yeah, it does sound French.
It does. And it doesn't have any deeper meaning than that from that standpoint. But she writes it. Yeah. And then he follows. That's like her not realizing she's guiding him towards this future destination that kind of sets things.
That's
and here's the other thing. What is the end of the world in this universe? Is it actually going to end, or is it just the end of the world for him? Because the girl he loves is dead, and then he kills someone.
Yeah.
Who I guess happens to be
the person going out with his sister.
Yeah.
So is it the end of the world for the world or end of the world for him? And it's kind of the back to that quote of that Gretchen says, if you could go back and change everything and make it better, would you? I forget exactly what that quote was.
It was like get rid of the sadness and
all
darkness.
All of the sadness and darkness. And could you like make it better?
And I think that's like the.
So is it the end of the world or is it like just what would be better for everybody in that situation?
Yeah. And I think
would
that's
he rather
the, that's
go,
the point.
Would he sacrifice himself not to save the entire world, all however many people in the 80s there were, not 7 billion, but you know what I mean? But like the whole world for himself or his sister, Gretchen, the teacher.
Yep.
I guess the pedo would be fine. That whole plot point just got like muted.
That's a weird one, don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think maybe you just hope that that works itself out and that his, what do they call it? Kitty porn dungeon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully that gets discovered regardless.
Yeah.
But like that kind of deal. Like, is the end of the world? Is it actually the end of the world or is it just the end of the world for him? And I think it's more the end of the world for
him. I think there's like maybe like a nihilist perspective that you could, that like, Donnie could take on of like, there's all this shit that's problematic. Like, is it better for us not to be here? Like, should we just let it happen? Right. Like, or do I see enough like goodness and like love in this like little circle that I have and realize that there's like a lot of people that have that throughout this entire world? And is that enough to make him make the selfless decision of like ending it for him, but letting the rest of them carry on, I guess?
So, but like, either sacrifice myself so Gretchen can live or, or she dies and I have to live without that kind of deal.
Yeah.
And it's like, at the same time, I guess like in that choice, if you really do love someone, would you sacrifice yourself for them in a world where they would never know you?
Right.
And they would be better for you? Cause like, otherwise it's like one of them, it's kind of like Romeo and Juliet. One of them would live without the other.
Right. But almost worse, they won't even know what you did.
But in the other world, she would never have known, so she would never be sad for him, right? But he would know that she died, and he's sad therefore. So, like, I don't know. Maybe it'd be, like, it's better than living after someone died in that choice, right? Because if he could live and have to live without her, she could live without him but never knowing he was kind of there, so she's not in that sadness and pain or whatever.
Yeah.
That pain is made better because it doesn't exist because she didn't know that.
What you were saying a couple of minutes ago, though, led me into the question of, like, what's up with the mom in the final scene? Because, like, the rest of the family's all gathered together and, like, crying and being sad, and she's just, dragging the cig, just kind of, like, because it's what you were saying about, like, would their lives be better or, like, be better or worse without knowing or whatever? And she was just kind of, like, I don't really have to deal with Donnie's, like, psychotic behavior, so, like, there's that, but it was also just kind of, like, just like the look that she had or like the blank stare made me think that like she somehow remembers part of the other timeline.
I think that final, very, very final sequence where you're seeing like Frank's face, like Charita, like all these
everybody
characters
in bed.
And some of them are like fine and sleeping and other ones like Frank is like sitting on the floor next to his bed. And like a tear like comes down, I think, or he's looking upset.
Yes. A tear comes down his right eye
where he got shot. Right. Yeah. In the other universe or whatever. And so like I think it's like some of these people are maybe remember parts of it and they don't know like what the fuck to do with it, and other people maybe just have like a feeling like something's wrong, or you know, again, like there's been a disturbance in the force kind of thing.
Yeah, like Gretchen's line to the little kid, like, did you know him? And she kind of sits there for a second almost not knowing what to say.
Like she's like exploring,
like she should say no, but she almost like feels like
I felt like I knew him.
I think I agree with what Todd was saying. His mom almost has like a guilty pleasure of like not having to deal with that anymore. Obviously, it's sad.
Well, I think it's hard.
But she knows that it's kind of like
for the best.
For the best, kind of. But also at the same time, she was on the plane that was part of that disturbance, right? So maybe she does have some of those memories. Maybe she does like think like,
what if out of all of them, she's fully like third eye conscious?
Oh, shit.
Maybe.
Could be.
Because, like, the whole time throughout it, she's just kind of, like, everything related to Donnie, she's just kind of like, I want the old Donnie back.
I just...
Like, she says that all the time.
So, one of the things I love...
Oh, and the old Donnie is who died.
Because, like, it makes you think, like, oh, pre-mental illness Donnie, but no, it might just be old Donnie...
Huh.
Timeline.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Interesting.
One of the things I love about this movie is the way, like, you feel like you get a lot of information about who a character is without them really. There's not a lot of exposition. Like, it'll just be a look.
At least in the non-director's cut, there's like zero explanation.
Right.
Explanation? No.
Nope.
What is it called?
Which one?
When it tells you...
Exposition?
Exposition.
Composition?
It could not.
Composition.
Exposition. Exposition. There's like zero exposition in this entire movie. They never give you any information about anything. You just see what's on screen in that scene. There's no explaining anything. I guess the only little bit is like the time travel. He talks about time travel and like
when there's staying, a little bit when like
staying in God's path. But like at the same time, it doesn't explain anything, how it works, or like that's what you see in a lot of movies. It explains like, oh, this is happening because this
the
reason.
Worst ruins no, movies all the yeah, time.
And he's just saying like, this is happening and I'm seeing what's happening. It describes what I'm doing, but it doesn't tell you what it describes is happening.
This like, movie does not want to tell you no. what it's doing. It wants you to ask the questions and figure it out.
Until the director's cut, which I think sounds like it ruined
well,
a little bit.
It just goes more into the, like, it goes unnecessarily detailed into the, to like the theory of the time travel. So just like, it takes away some of the fun elements
for me. I think one of the best things about the movie is that it talks about he read a book about time travel and he thinks it's happening to him, but it doesn't tell you anything about it.
Yeah.
That's just totally fine. And it almost makes it better because it's like, I don't need to know all the specifics of how this universe works. I just need to see like how he feels. And that's what it's about, right? Like, does he actually believe that this is happening to him, or is he crazy? Is he trying to tell people that this is happening to him, or do people just think he's crazy? I want to know what the fuck the therapist was trying to tell his mom that was super important.
I think, yeah, I don't know. I wondered like, about that too.
Mm-hmm. I kind of thought like, maybe he said he was going to kill Frank.
Well, his visions were getting worse and he was being like more and more open with her about what was going on. And so I think
he was hypnotized.
Just, yeah. But it, like, it was, he was telling her a lot more in the later sessions. And I think she finally was just like, yo, this is going to be dangerous for him or somebody else. Like, I see where this is going. We've doubled his medication or whatever, and he's getting worse. He's not getting better. So I think maybe it was just like, hey, y'all got to like talk to me. So like, he's not okay.
I think, I don't know, maybe like, because there's this movie cuts where they would normally, this movie cuts and jumps to something else where other movies would sit there and give exposition for stuff, right? Tell you what's going to happen next. A really good example of that is when his dad, after they almost hit Grandma Death.
Yep.
And then his dad's like, what'd she say? And then he like almost takes a breath like he's about to like say something, and then it just cuts to the next thing. Yeah. That's what this movie does really well, is it doesn't give any exposition. It cuts out all those places where it would.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's talking to his therapist, it'll cut just like right as he's going to like say something. Like, it'll give you a little bit, and then it'll cut like there's an hour left in that session. What else did they say?
Yeah.
So did he talk about like, I kind of thought like, was he just going to kill Gretchen? Was he going to like murder her? Was he like kind of like crazy or something like that? That's what I thought she was saying. Oh, like, you need to like call me back now kind of deal. Like,
I think
something's like, going to happen.
I think like knowing a little bit about like schizophrenia and like mental illness like that, that there's a point where like it can become, mental illness can obviously become dangerous to themselves and people around them, not necessarily because they're violent or dangerous, but because they're seeing things, because they're putting themselves in situations where they have beliefs that might alter their decision-making. They might put themselves into a dangerous position or put somebody else in a dangerous position. So that's kind of always the way I took it, that she's like, I got to like talk to mom and dad because this shit's getting worse, not better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, like playing into the fate thing, like had that voicemail come like 8 hours earlier, would mom not have gone to California and everything would have been different, right?
Yeah. That's actually wild. Okay. So honestly, there's so many different like theories and rabbit holes that we could jump down.
Rabbit holes.
You also said Easter eggs earlier, so.
So and I both looked at each other. We're like.
Yeah, we were like, oh.
There's a bunny in this movie.
But no, there's so many different like rabbit holes. That. We can dive down, you know.
Yeah.
Go on any tangents. And I think that's what's like super fun about the movie. Like, ultimately, we could sit here and talk for like triple the length of the actual runtime of the movie. So let's just jump ahead and like kind of talk about why we think it's such an influential or impactful movie.
I think one of the things that this movie does the best, and I wish some other movies could try to tell a story in this manner, is the fact we've kind of talked about it and talked about it, hit little points, mentioned some stuff. I know I just said the same thing four times because I'm trying to collect my thoughts.
Well, this is what Donnie Darko does. See, you start just going in circles. Yeah,
is, like I've said 100 times before, it tells the story in a manner with almost no context to the next scene. It's just jump cuts. It's like you're watching a sequence, jump cut to the next sequence with no context, with no exposition, nothing. And I think it does it really well. And it makes a really interesting story that, again, you could talk about for hours with people. And I think that's something more movies should try. It's not a super common thing. It's not really common at all. I think the only other example I can kind of think of that does a similar thing is Inception. But again, it gives way more information than Donnie Darko. And I think the fact that it just does the jump cuts so much and so like without context is one of the best parts about the movie.
Earlier you said Shutter Island as well. I think that's a fairly good comparison of a movie.
That's not got more of the trippy. Yeah. It's got more of the trippy vibes.
Kind of vibes, yeah.
Have y'all seen Primer by this is a little aside, the movie Primer? No. It was an indie film, like I think it's like 15 years old now. Ultra indie, like no budget. Like Donnie Darko looks like a massive Hollywood blockbuster compared to this. Written and starred in and directed by this guy, I can't remember his name. That one is a mind bender. I'd put that in the same category as far as like the circles you do about the story and time travel.
Mm-hmm.
I would put that on y'all's list. Maybe not to talk about, but
just,
to watch.
Just at least watch.
Yeah, 100%. I think this movie does a really good job at not giving you information, like in a good way.
Yeah, I think it sometimes works for what the story is too, right? Yeah. Like the cuts, because it is like, I feel like,
the story doesn't make sense.
It's a puzzle, right?
And so why are they going to try to over-explain it to you?
Well, and the pieces are like kind of all over, right? Mm-hmm. Like they'll give you a little bit here and then like give you a little bit more information about it 30 minutes later that you have to like connect the dots back to. And it kind of makes the whole thing a puzzle to like put together.
I think that's something this movie nails, definitely.
It does a great job of like creating that intrigue. Like that's what I talked about right off the bat of this episode, but it's like it creates that intrigue, and it's like the entire time you're just trying to like you said, piece the jigsaw together. So it's like, I don't know, like obviously telling a story in like kind of like a jumping around type order, like dropping in little pieces here and there is kind of common, but it's like I don't know if I know one that does it to where it like keeps me so intrigued to where I'm like, this is almost like a corkboard and string type movie, right? Where you're like having to
100%
like piece everything together, and you like step back and you're like freaking Charlie Day and Always Sunny. Like
that's a really good way to describe it. Actually,
at the same time, other stories that try to execute this same kind of deal jump around in the timeline of the story. It's told non-linearly. This is linearly told, just with finding information out. Which I think works really good. And some movies will try to execute that same idea, but instead of revealing information in ways that are unexpected and or out of order, it tells the story totally timeline straight. Like it's a movie about time travel that doesn't travel in time,
right?
Like you're not jumping back to different parts. It's totally straight, normal day, straight on, like any other movie, but it's revealing information and it's about time travel in that manner until the very end. It goes back to the beginning, which I think is one of the best ways to do time
travel. It's a fascinating way to tell a time travel story.
It's like you're not time traveling in the movie until at the very end.
Yeah.
I just think it's so good because it's just done so well.
Your brain is like active. You can't, this is not like a casual watch. Like,
no.
Your brain is activated for the entire hour and 45 minutes or whatever it is.
Yeah. You got it. Like, you have to be paying attention. Cause, like, even then, I blinked for a minute and I missed the fact that the engine's from the plane. Yeah.
And those little Easter eggs are like, the plane is not so much an Easter egg, but like, it part of the fun is like noticing shit.
Yeah.
Like, noticing the Graham Greene quote about, burning down the house and them telling that story, and then he burns down the house, and that's also in Donnie's background, and then like all the little like notes on the fridge. Like if you're not paying attention, you miss some of the fun moments that make the film like fascinating to watch.
And here's an example of a movie that does something similar, but executed in a poor way, is Looper.
Oh,
is a movie about time travel, right?
Yep.
And they're traveling back in time and they're telling a story non-linearly, and it doesn't work as well as telling a story completely linearly, but revealing information at different times that totally comes. I just think it's the same kind of concept executed completely different. And I think Donnie Darko does it way better than that. And I think more movies should try to tell stories like that. Try not to give as much information. You don't need that much to enjoy a film.
Because
if you give too much, like you're saying, the director's cut doesn't necessarily ruin it. It's just like, you don't need that.
I love when films
minimal
amount of stories assume that the audience is smart.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't explain it all. Like, it takes me out of the movie.
Absolutely.
Like, if you're explaining it to me now, I know you're like talking to me and trying to get me, instead of me having to figure it out on my
mm-hmm.
own.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that about this movie. Go
ahead, Todd. Yeah. Also, I got to touch on this. The humor in this movie is fantastic.
It's perfect.
Oh, phenomenal.
The jokes.
Well, even then,
deliveries on stuff, just the moments of humor are so perfect for the,
they break
the
it up
darkness
just enough.
And like seriousness of this movie.
Well, like,
and the quotes,
both of what you just said ties together. I think a really good example is when they're doing that intro montage to the school, and it's like, you get all the little Easter eggs of the different background characters at their lockers.
You learn a little bit about everyone just from a split moment,
from a slight little thing, but there's also that humor mixed in there to where there's like, you know, there's the girl checking herself out in the mirror, and then there's the two dudes doing coke at their locker as the like teacher walks by and is like, that's not right, kind of thing, but just like shrugs and keeps moving.
So one thing I want to touch on, I wanted to talk about it earlier but I forgot, when Gretchen comes into class and the teacher, I was like, that seems wildly inappropriate for a teacher to say.
I wrote in my notes, this teacher would be fired.
Oh yeah, right? But the fact that like the girl, Gretchen, doesn't say anything. She's just looking at Donnie, and then freaking Drew Barrymore's like, so-and-so, get up.
Yep.
Just like, not like a, oh yeah, you can sit there. It's just, no, you're getting up. They're getting together.
Yeah.
That was kind of like a matchmaking moment.
I was like, this seems like wildly inappropriate for a teacher to like do.
Yep.
It's just like, it felt so like weird and random. And that's kind of one of the reasons why Drew Barrymore's character was like one of my favorite characters in the movie, is feels so like out of place and like weird.
Well, I think she like,
who is she? Where is she coming from? Is she like supposed to be this cool teacher that like everybody likes, or is she just like this weird teacher that like people are scared of kind of deal?
I think it's probably a little bit of both. I feel like she's like a little bit of a like 80s era feminist, and like
she's
trying really hard to make a real difference and talk to these kids like a human inside of this establishment that's really like pushing against
it. She's the
like,
older version of Donnie's sister, kind of.
Kinda, yeah. Which I never said my favorite character. I think I love the whole family dynamic. Yeah. I think Maggie Gyllenhaal like is great as his sister, which is a weird sentence because she is a sister. But like
the dinner scene at the very beginning is fan fucking tastic.
The way
it's top notch.
Every scene that they're in together feels so natural and good. And I think like he's so brooding in this and so moody and heavy. That like her, she's like the dad more, right? Like her lightness and like silliness, and like she's like leaving late at night to go hang out with Frank and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like her, like almost like laissez-faire like attitude about things brings like a lightness that I think is like so in contrast. You can tell the two of them, even though they bicker, like they love the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
So I love that. I love their dynamic. I think she's my favorite non-Donnie character.
I felt like that beginning scene where they're swearing at each other is so great because it's like so real. Like, who the fuck says fuck ass?
Right.
But you've been in a situation where you're like flustered and you're trying to say something and you say like fuck ass or like,
yeah,
like suck a fuck or something like that. Like, no, it doesn't sound good and it sounds awful and you look stupid for saying it. But at the same time, like, that's like real.
Yeah.
Like people say shit like that all the time because they're like flustered and want to say, get on top of like whatever they're saying and just can't.
Yeah. To AJ's point though, to where they like bicker, but the love's there. When Donnie is taking Gretchen up to his bedroom and she's just like, it gives it the one quick little cut and she's just like,
yeah,
she's proud of him. Yeah, she's a proud sister. She's like, hell yeah, my brother got game.
I'm glad you mentioned that because my favorite scene in the movie, I think there's some favorite scenes like the Smurf scene just because of the dialogue, my favorite just like moment in the movie, I guess, more than scene, is when he's coming down with Gretchen from upstairs and that Echo and the Bunny Man song hits. And it's like that slow-mo shot as he's coming down and he's like finally like gotten to peak closeness with this like significant other type person. And they're coming down afterwards. And it's just like, I feel like that was the moment he like made his decision. He loves this girl, I guess. And he's okay with like his destiny, which that's referenced a lot too. Like the, what is it, like the doomed character kind of like.
Yeah. But also, like, I can't remember what scene it is or whatever, but Donnie's asking Frank like a question about like the future. And Frank's like, you should know that. Like, you should already know this. And that was like kind of those like little moments that you're just like, okay, like, does Donnie actually know or is he still piecing it together? Because it's like, I don't know. There's little bits like that.
Oh, that in the scene that we're, where Donnie is looking in the mirror and he the very first time that he like you're the camera's like facing him and he puts his hand up against like the camera lens, basically like the viewer where the viewer is and like presses in, blew my mind when the first time I saw it. And then like,
dude, yeah, I was gonna say there's a surprise, like I was not expecting so many VFX used within this movie. Like that actually blew my mind when I was watching it.
Yeah.
Like that was part of like the not used meeting in really my expectations. Weird ways. Yeah. Because it was really well done, but it wasn't like, it's like, you know, nowadays you say VFX, you think like fucking Marvel on blue screen, but it's like, it's just added to it, you know?
So who do you think had the best performance? Who was your favorite performance in this movie? It's got to be Donnie, right?
My favorite is definitely Jake. I mean, it made me a lifelong Jake Gyllenhaal fan.
Yeah.
I mean, he nailed it too.
This was a fantastic
role. I think,
role
I can't remember the actor's name, but his mom, I think, is incredible.
Mm-hmm. She had a great performance too.
And Maggie, I thought was great, even though she didn't like have a big role.
Yeah.
She was great in her moments.
He had, Jake had a fantastic performance in this.
Yeah. Maybe. Some of it was just being moody, which I'm okay with, but he.
Which like did really well without feeling like over moody. Yeah, like Ben Affleck like as Batman moody was like overacting
the,
almost.
The scene
you know
that
I mean?
Really like cemented it for me, and like rewatching it last night, I had kind of forgotten about this, but like where he showed like a lot of range was, it was one of the psychology sessions where he's under hypnosis and he's kind of like going between like silly and like, and he's talking about sex and he's like kind of horny and then he's like sad. And he's like crying and he doesn't want to be alone. And it's like within like 30 seconds or whatever it was, he went like a whole range of human emotion, right?
Yeah.
Between fear and love. Mm-hmm. He like hit all of them, I feel like. And I was really impressed watching it last night how well, I don't know how old he was when he did this.
He was
this.
Only 21.
Yeah.
He was 20, 21 or 22, somewhere in that range.
But I mean, he was great.
It was crazy like how young he was for like nailing a role like that. I mean, I feel like you see a lot of young actors might not have that kind of range at that age. Like, like that's impressive.
Well, it's also like, I would say like Gyllenhaal would be in that top elite group of like current, you know, middle-aged actors that like grew up coming through it, like DiCaprio and Matt Damon and like those dudes I would all put into that category. But it's like, I feel like this is the role that like catapulted him to get to there.
I feel like Gyllenhaal is always like, he's an A-lister, but he kind of has the kind of C-list vibes almost, like
almost indie vibes,
like, almost
because he does a lot of projects like that.
I think he does a lot of more of the indie stuff like Donnie Darko. I think Nightcrawler too, like that kind of stuff.
I loved Nightcrawler. Yeah.
Oh, he's so creepy.
Like he's got like, he's
perfectly
like
creepy.
He's so good, but he's kind of almost got a vibe of not being forgotten about, but like not talked about as much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Like,
but I feel like he always accepts roles. Like, I don't think he ever thinks about it for the money. I think he's truly an actor who thinks about it for the art.
Yeah. I think same with his sister too.
Definitely. Oh,
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the thing with Jake is that he's signing on to shit that he is into.
Yeah.
And that's why you're like, oh, he made three movies the last couple of years. Didn't even know.
And you know what's the funny part? Is I think the best Marvel movie with the best villain is him as...
Was that Spider-Man?
Mysterio.
Him as Mysterio. I think that's like he's like the best Marvel villain in all of them. Like he's got the most like actual like...
Charisma.
Like I don't know. It's just like you kind of like see his point when he's like playing that character.
Like he sells you on why you should like follow the evil person.
A little bit. You know what I mean?
I don't think you understood the point of that story.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, every good villain should be understandable. You know what I mean?
Right. Like the Joker.
Yeah. Or like Mr. Electro and Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
Or like that.
George Lopez's character.
Yeah, I know. I was just like, I don't really see where. What's his point?
Honestly, it's been so long.
Yeah, I was hoping you'd explain it, but
yeah,
you wouldn't. No, every great villain you can kind of like see, like the Joker in the Dark Knight. It's like he just kind of wants a little bit of anarchy, and you can see what he's going for. It's not just crazy. He has a motive that he's going for.
Yeah, and he makes him real, makes him relatable to some degree. You can see how somebody goes down that path, I guess.
Yeah, that's what makes a good villain.
I'm with that. Anyways, what do you guys like? How do you want to rank this movie? Like, do you want to compare it to others in the genre? Do you want to rank it as like a standalone?
I think you could do it both ways. I think you
can give it a letter grade. You can also give it a number grade.
Yeah.
What do you normally do?
Whatever you want to do.
Yeah. We let the guests pick the parameters and then we try and rank it within
that. It usually turns out to be just out of 10.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do that. Let's do that. That's simple.
Let's do letter grades.
Yeah.
Let's do letter grades for fun.
You know, like this, A through F.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
We always do out of 10.
E for excellent or like U for unsatisfactory. Not the elementary grade.
Gotcha. Are we adding S above A? Like is S tier above A? No.
It's okay, just okay. A to F.
A to F, yeah. Got it. I think for me, it's an A, obviously, because I love the movie. It hits all. I fucking love sci-fi. I love time travel. I love Jake Gyllenhaal. I love movies that kind of make your head spin or just anything story-wise, narrative-wise that makes you like really, really think deep at times. But I also love that it doesn't take itself too seriously and breaks it up so it doesn't just feel like a heavy, like 2-hour-long beating.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's an A either way. I think it's an A+ if you put it in like the pantheon of like sci-fi time travel movies. I think it's top tier personally, but I give it an A, if for no other reason, like the originality and that they were able to pull it, like that it works with like some of the disjointed elements
for everything we talked about,
the confusing narrative and the, what the fuck did I just watch factor at the very, very end. The fact that it works and that we're talking about it 20 years later, it's a easy A for me.
Yeah.
That's also a good movie.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I think it's an A for me too. So you said a solid A. A+?
Oh yeah.
Or solid A.
Solid A, yeah.
Solid A. I'm gonna say I think it's a solid A for me too. Again, for all the same reasons that you're talking about and like the big like what the fuck factor, but also just the fact that like it doesn't need to make sense because it's that good of a movie. Like other movies that try to do the same thing try to make it make sense and it just doesn't work as well. In this one, at least the non-director's cut, I can't speak for the director's cut, but the original release is just so fine with not making sense.
Like wouldn't
that
change
I think
a thing.
That's what makes it work so well is it didn't try to over-explain anything. It didn't try to give you an actual conclusion as was he just crazy? Did he die, just die? And was that like his final thoughts of whatever happened? Or was that like, I don't know. I think that's what makes it so good and so entertaining. And it's so rewatchable.
It's so rewatchable.
Because every time you watch it, you'll see another little thing. Like,
and the comedy works so well that it's like you're not just unpacking this heavy thing that you laugh again later when you like get to the Smurf scene or any of the dumb stuff.
No. I think it's definitely a solid A.
I'm with that. Yeah. Like, I mean, you and I have watched so many movies, not even like for the pod, but just like through film school and just being film nerds on our own. And like, I have to give it like clearly, it's got to be an A because like. Out of the whole Rolodex of movies I've seen in my entire life, I draw a blank for trying to find comparisons. And like we were saying earlier, it's like Shutter Island, kind of, but there's nothing that's truly comparative to this movie. So I think it's unique enough to where it's just such a good standalone film. And like you said, you can go back and rewatch it again and again, and it's not going to get tired. Like there's many movies that are like that, like Interstellar. Like I know so many people who are like, oh, I didn't get it until like the fourth time I watched it. It's the same kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Like it's just so unique that it's created its own aura.
But again, it's so unique because it's a movie about time travel that doesn't travel time. It's like so
allegedly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well,
if you subscribe like to one theory versus another,
for 99% of the movie, it doesn't travel time. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's so unique of a story. It's just, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think, I was going to say one thing that I thought was really weird about this, and I'm not going to nail this, but this was Richard Kelly's first film out of film school. He wrote like a short story about the like jet engine part and like Donnie, and then started to build on that. I don't think he wrote and directed an entire film since then. He's really? Worked on a lot of stuff. So like he did Domino with Keira Knightley. I think he wrote that, but didn't direct it. And that, but it's based on a real person, totally different. He's worked on a bunch of other stuff, but I think the reason that all this works is because it was clearly like a love passion project.
Oh yeah.
And I think he went so deep with it. And was so meticulous about all those little details that's the reason it works. And it's like a test. I can't believe somebody gave him. I think it was hard for him to get the money, but I can't believe that somebody gave this kid money to make this movie, and he got Jake Gyllenhaal on it and all the stuff. I mean, like, I feel like he's Donnie Darko. Like, how the fuck did he pull that off? And then he really hasn't made anything since. It's bizarre.
Because I'd never heard of him as a director.
He won a bunch of awards, and he's done stuff. It's not like he hasn't done work. He's done plenty of work since then. And he's written some other scripts that haven't been made into films yet, at least. It's bizarre.
I do know how it ended up getting to theaters. Cause I know they basically Drew Barrymore's production company called Flower Child stepped in and helped them get like distribution and additional funding and all that kind of stuff.
I wonder if she or somebody in her company saw it somewhere.
Crazy. I mean, she was in it. You're
beforehand.
The short. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, dude, it's such a good movie. But crazy before movie. We wrap things up, I just wanted to open the floor to you. If you had anything you wanted to bring up, anything you wanted to touch, anything you're doing, anything you want to plug.
No, I think that last point was the only one I wanted to bring up that I thought was just like a weird point about the movie. No, I think the only thing I wanted to say is, Dom, I'm starting to doubt your commitment to Sparkle Motion.
Fair enough.
That's fair. I mean, destruction's a form of creation too.
Hell yeah. I'm bad at quotes. Sorry.
That's a good quote.
You could have just said cellar door.
Could have said what?
Cellar door.
Cellar door.
Oh, yeah. That was a part of the movie, huh?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Usually after we say something, parts of the movie just fly out my brain.
Remember when you edit at the very end of this episode, just have like, you know, Finn at the end of the movie, just cellar door. Like nice text.
Yeah. We can make that happen. Yeah.
And just put like some umlauts and like accents over it to make it look even fancier.
Oh, yeah. Might try and see if we can do the Donnie font.
Oh, that's, you can get it.
I can just ask Kerrigan to make it.
Yeah, it exists. You can get it. I got it when I was in like graphic design courses. I actually had it at one point.
That's sick. But yeah, so this has been another episode of Theater Cleaners. Having AJ here was a absolute hoot and a holler. Always love when someone's passionate about
hoot
the film they're talking
holler.
About.
Hoot and a holler, not just hoot
sometimes
or
you
a holler.
Get one of the two.
It's a hoot and a holler.
Well, yeah, like the movie, there's a lot of highs and lows. So, did that make sense?
In an episode of Theater Cleaners?
What?
There's a lot of highs and lows?
I don't know. I'm at my wit's end, so.
Todd has run out of gas.
Yeah, my brain is quite full. Yeah.
I just don't even know what to say sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know how to like end them sometimes.
I think. We're just gonna say that was all for this episode. It was wonderful to have AJ on. It's great to see another creator of 12 Midnight, the people that keep us running. And yeah, it's been a good time. Hope you guys enjoyed.
Yeah, catch you later.
Catch you later.